So our final topic session is the multi-kernel, a new operating system architecture for scalable multi-core systems. And Andrew Ballin's going to give the talk. This is a paper by Andrew Ballin, Paul Barn, Derek DeGon, Rebecca Isaacs, Simon Peters, Timothy Roscoe, Adrian Schupach, and Akhilesh Tengano.
Today's operating systems are more or less by default a shared memory kernel that executes on every core in the machine, exchanges data through shared data structures that are protected by locks or other shared memory synchronization mechanisms. And anything that doesn't fit into this model, like offload processors, is abstracted away as a device behind some sort of primitive device API. And we think that a good way to address this, and it mirrors exactly something Bob Willis-Scott brought up at the end of the keynote this morning, is to see this heterogeneous network of different cores inside a system as a distributed system. And so we propose structuring the OS as a distributed system. And we call the model for an operating system structured in this way a lot. And so in this talk, I'm going to present three key design principles that we think make up the model for a model, making the core communication explicit, making the structure of the OS neutral to the underlying hardware, and doing status replication inside the machine. And so then in the remainder of this talk, we're going to introduce those principles before going on to Bowerfish, which is our implementation of the kernel, and presenting one part of the evaluation from our paper. So, the first design principle is making inter-core communication explicit. And by that we mean that all communication between cores in the system happens with explicit message passing operations. There is no assumption of shared state in the model. That's quite an extreme statement. In particular, it's a big divergence from the way people build OS code today. But if we can make that work, it has some big advantages. First, most importantly, it allows us to decouple the structure of the system from the concrete details of the in-core communication mechanism between particular cores in the machine. And so communication patterns between cores in the system are expressed explicitly. That means that instead of optimizing shared memory algorithms, thinking about which cache lines are likely to be local to my core, how do I optimize the locality of a particular data structure, you think about, to implement a particular operation, with which other cores in the system do I need to communicate explicitly? Message-based communication also naturally supports heterogeneous cores and non-coherent interconnects, such as PCI Express. Think about some part of an application running on an ARM offload processor on the network. It's a better match for future hardware, because that hardware may support cheap explicit message passing, like the Tidera processors, where you can send a message across the mesh network in tens of cycles. Or because that hardware may have limited or no support for cache coherence. An example of a system that fits in this category is Intel's 80-core Polaris prototype, where they didn't actually implement cache coherence in hardware, because it was too expensive. Message-based communication allows an important optimization, which is that you can decouple the message, the operation that requests some remote service, from the handling of the response, which is the notification that some operation is completed or failed. And this split phase behavior is important for getting greater concurrency out of the system. Finally, we can reason about the performance, the scalability, and the correctness of systems based on explicit message passing. So you're probably thinking, well, that's all very nice, but the machines that we have are fundamentally shared memory systems, and the performance of any message passing primitive is going to be horrendously slow, much slower than you can get with efficient shared memory structures. And what I'm going to show you now is a simple micro benchmark that we did just to try to evaluate this trade-off in current hardware. There are two cases. In the shared memory case, what we have is a set of cores that are all updating a shared array, three byte updates. And so what happens is when every core modifies the array, the cache coherence protocol processor has to migrate the modified cache lines around between all the cores that perform the updates. And so while this migration happens, the processor is stalled, and the overall cost of the update is limited by the latency of these round trips across the internet to fetch or invalidate cache lines. And the overall performance of the update, in terms of the throughput of updates, will depend upon the data size in terms of number of cache lines, and the contention in terms of the number of cores manipulating the state. And this is how it scales. This is what happens when every core modifies one cache line, two, four, eight cache lines. You can see that it's not scaling particularly well. What's interesting here is that as we're adding cores, every core is still executing the same number of instructions. They're directly manipulating shared state. There's no locking happening. And so all of those extra cycles, the processor is stalled, blocked away with the internet to migrate cache lines rather. In the message passing case, we've localized the shared state on a single server core. And rather than the client calls directly manipulating the shared state, they express their update as a message, which they send through a shared memory ring buffer-based message channel that we've implemented on shared memory. And then the server call locally performs our base and sends back to a pod. In this benchmark, we're using synchronous RPC, so the client will block while they're waiting for a reply from the server. Here's how it performs. You can see this is the case where the server updates a single cache line in response to every message. And this is the case where it updates 8 cache lines in response to every message. It makes very little difference because the amount of data when you're across the interconnect is the same, and the data is all local to the server's cache. You can see that for this experiment, we're already better for 4 calls and 4 cache lines on this machine. But what's more interesting is that the reason that this is increasing here is due to queuing delay at the server. So the clients are blocked, waiting for the server to satisfy their request because the server is saturated. So if we measure the actual cost experience of the server of performing the update, which is flat because the state is all local in its cache, we can infer that roughly the amount of cycles between those two lines are the amount of cycles that would be available to do other work if we had a split-phase RPC period. We could have the client send a request and then do some other work and asynchronously handle the reply. And that's an important optimization, the split-phase behavior in the message-based system, which is much harder to the machine memory system because you don't get to execute any instructions. You're waiting for the cache connect protocol. Our second design principle is that we separate the structure of the operating system from the underlying hardware. So the only hardware-specific parts of the system are the message transports themselves, which are highly optimized and specialized to the details of the hardware interconnect that we have available. So in the example I just showed you, the message transport is micro-optimized to the details of AMD's hyper-transport cache coherence implementation. And in the common case, it takes only 2 hyper-transport requests to move a message. The other part of the system that's optimized to the hardware is, of course, device drivers and the stuff that interacts with the CPU. This separation allows us to adapt to the changing performance characteristics of the systems on which we run. And I'll give you an example of that later on. And it allows us, in particular, to lay line on the concrete message transport implementations and protocol implementations that are used on different systems. We think that this separation of concerns is a good way to adapt to the hardware as it changes. Our final design principle is that all potentially shared state in the machine, and this includes anything that an operating system would typically be maintaining shared memory, including scheduler IOQs, process control blocks, file system metadata, so on, is accessed as if it were a local replica rather than a globally consistent copy. This is sort of naturally required by the message passing model. If you don't have shared state in the model, you need to send messages to maintain. The advantages of this are that it naturally supports domains that don't share memory. Again, think about the case where you have some application where part of the application is running on an x86 CPU and part of the application is running on an ARM processor on the end. And those 2 different parts of the application are both using OS services. It also naturally supports changes to the set of running cores because we have hot button devices that might have cores on them, or we're bringing up and down cores for power management reasons. You can use results from distributed systems to deal with the case where you have replicas on nodes that are coming and going. So, as I've presented the model so far, you can sort of see this progression of progressive approaches to scalability in operating systems where people have identified that sharing is a limitation on scalability, and they've progressively introduced replication as an optimization to help systems scale. To the multi-kernel being at the extreme endpoint on the far right of that, where we have no shared state at all on the execute replica maintenance. In reality, there will be machines, there will be cases where it's much cheaper to share. An example of that is hyperthreads or cores that are tightly coupled sharing of cache between them. And so in reality, on multi-kernel, we can use sharing as a local optimization of replication. And so you might just manipulate some shared state if the core that you're going to is very close. But the important point is that the model remains split-phase replica maintenance model, rather than the model being sharing optimization getting replication. And so when you put all that together, this is the model of a system constructed as a multi-kernel. Note that we can customize the operating system and the state that it maintains to the core on which it happens to run. And note too that we can support applications using shared memory. If the application wants to use shared memory and if the hardware supports it, that's perfectly fine. But we don't rely on it for the underlying function of the operating system. So Barrelfish is our actual implementation of this. It's a from-scratch implementation of multi-kernel. Currently runs on 64-bit Intel processors, but the beginnings of an ARM core are already booting. And it's open source. In Barrelfish, we factor the OS node into a privileged kernel mode portion called the CPU driver, and privileged user domain called the monitor. So the CPU driver serially handles traps and exceptions, while the monitor is responsible for mediating local operations on global state and actually executing the various replica maintenance protocols. Our message transport on current cache peer and x86 hardware is our implementation of URPC. And that's this ring buffer that I mentioned. But we fully expect that to change as hardware transports change. We expect to use different message transports between different cores. There's a whole set of other ideas in Barrelfish that are not directly related to the multi-kernel model, and I'm not going to talk about these now, feel free to ask questions. But perhaps in particular, note that we decouple the message passing primitive from the synchronization mechanism. We use capabilities for resource management in the system using a model very similar to SCL4. And we're running many other OS services up in user life. Barrelfish has a whole set of applications running on it because we're trying as much as possible to build this as a real system. So if you're looking at the slideshow you've got, it has a web server which survived a Slashdot a couple of weeks ago. We run virtual machines, share memory microbenchmarks, database engine, constraint engine, and a lot more online. So we're continuing to build Barrelfish and try to make it real. But enough of that. How do you evaluate a radically different operating system structure? Barrelfish, by the fact that it's a prototype and it's from scratch, is necessarily less complete than an existing OS such as that system does. So our goals when evaluating Barrelfish are really that it should have good baseline performance, which means that it's at least comparable to existing systems on current hardware. But what's much more important to us, at least, is that it be able to scale with core counts, be able to adapt to different hardware on which it finds itself running, and be able to exploit the message passing primitive to performance. So I'm going to show you one part of the evaluation from the paper, which is the case study of how we implement unmapped in Barrelfish. When you perform an unmapped operation, logically what needs to happen is you need to send a message to every other core holding some shared memory. You need to wait for them to acknowledge that they've locally performed an unmapped that you validated the TL in your workload. On most operating systems, the way that this works is that the kernel sends in a processor interrupt to all the other cores and then spins on some region of shared memory waiting for an acknowledgement that the unmapped has been performed. On Barrelfish, the way this works is that the user sends a local request to their local monitor, and then the monitors implement a single phase commit across the system, because that's essentially what an unmap is. It's a single phase commit on TLB. And so the question is, how do we implement the single phase commit? How do we implement this communication across the machine? We tried a number of different communication protocols from that. In the unit interface I'm about to show you, we have one URPC channel between the initiating core and all the other cores in the system. And so we write the message once into every channel, they perform the unmap, and then they acknowledge the response. In the broadcast case, we have a single channel that is read by all the cores. Neither of these actually perform particularly well. The particular broadcast doesn't work well because cache coherence is not broadcast. When you write the message, it crosses the interconnect once to every receiver, there's no broadcast underneath. So how can we make this go better? If you look at the topology of this machine, it kind of naturally suggests a multicast optimization. What you really want to do is send the message fewer times across the interconnect. And so what we do in this example is we send the message once to every socket, rather than sending the message once for every core, which means that the same message crosses those hypertransport links many times. So we send a message once to an aggregation core in a socket, who then locally sends it on to its neighbors, and that local send is much faster because all those cores share the same cache. There's an additional optimization, which is when we observe that some sockets will take longer to get to because there are more hypertransport costs involved, they're further away on the internet. So you want to send to those sockets that are further away before you send to the local ones to get greater parallelism in the way the messages travel across the machine. And you can see that this scales much better. But it brings up an important point. In order to apply this optimization, we need to have a lot of knowledge about the underlying hardware. We at least need to know the mapping of cores to sockets, And we need to know the messaging lanes so that we can send messages to the calls that are furthest away first. More generally, Marrakesh needs a way to reason about global system resources and handle the diversity of the hardware on which it runs. And the way we can't currently tackle this is with constraint logic programming. So we have a unit called the system knowledge base that stores as rich and detailed a representation of the hardware information that we can gather or measure, and allows us to perform online reasoning queries against it. And so we use a prologue query on the system knowledge base to construct the appropriate multicast routing tree for the machine on which we're running. When we put all this together, this is how the unmanned primitive on Barrelwash performs. What's important here, I think, is not that Barrelwash is necessarily scaling better than Linux or Windows, because you could equally apply these kinds of optimizations to traditional systems. And you can also see here that Barrelwash is suffering from a fairly expensive message passing primitive to contact its local client. What's more important is thinking about this as a communication problem, and thinking about how to implement a single phase commit on a particular system, abstractly from how it might perform an unmap across the machine. That seems to give a better handle on being able to adapt the operating system to the hardware on which it runs, and being able to scale the operating system with different hardware architectures. To very, very briefly summarize the other results from the paper, we can run shared memory workloads such as Flash and OpenMP with essentially no penalty, which is not very surprising because it's just exercising the hardware cache inheritance mechanism. We have respectable network throughput and web server workload, web server performance. The main high-level bit from these results is not that Barrelwash is better than Linux or anything like that, because it's a very apples and oranges comparison. The high-level result for us is that Barrelwash performs reasonably on current hardware. And so we can conclude from this that there is no inherent performance penalty from building an operating system as a multi-kernel, and that there's the potential for being able to scale much better in the future. And so to wrap up, I've argued that modern computers are inherently distributed systems inside a box, and that it's therefore time to rethink the structure of an operating system to match this. I presented the multi-kernel, which is our model of the operating system as a distributed system. And it uses explicit communication and replicated state, and it tries to be keep the structure of the operating system neutral to the underlying hardware topology. And I also presented Barrelwash, which is our concrete implementation of the multi-kernel. It has reasonable performance on current hardware, but I believe more importantly, better scalability and adaptability for future hardware. And I think we can conclude that it shows that the approach is possible. Put in another plug for our website at this point. Please visit that. You can download the source code of the system. You can also find out a lot more information. And if you'd like to see Barrelwash doing anything other than letting bitmaps to a frame buffer, please come along to our demo and request session tomorrow afternoon, where we'll have some visualizations going. With that, I'm happy to take questions. So there are two things I'll say to that. First of all, Barrelwash we've been focusing on so far how to build the OS that we expect. And so we don't want to make any particular demands on how you structure an application. We can support POSIX style application programming calls. But I think that clearly that's not the right way to build an application that will adapt to large numbers of different calls. And so the answer is going to have to be some higher level programming modeling. Either languages, runtimes, things like MapReduce. There's a whole different set of ways to express this. And we think that a tight coupling between the runtimes for those kinds of programming environments and the underlying OS that can make use of hardware knowledge is the right level at which to do that.
My name is Michael Johnson, PhD student at Nikan UNSW in Sydney. I have a question about your ULPC performance. So in the setup of your web server and IP loopback benchmarks, you seem to you distribute the processes across the course, and on one core you only seem to run that process and monitor and nothing else really. So it seems when you assign the URPC to that process, the process is mostly running and ready to call for that URPC message. So you have to run into a case where I have to take the performance and switch back to the correct process to actually receive the message. So the thing is, in a real world system, you will probably run into that case a lot more often. So I think I've any experience or comment on numbers on that.
That's true. So there are two things to say about that. We've made an explicit design decision to decouple the messaging primitive from a notification primitive, like an end process refrog or something like that. And that's because it's very expensive to perform notifications. So at least on our hardware, it costs something like 800 cycles on the sending side just to send an API, and more than 1,000 cycles to take the trap and handle an API. So you clearly don't want to do this for every message. And that's why we've made the decision to decouple those. So then, given that you have that decoupling, you have a trade-off. You sometimes will need to send the notification because you have some operation that needs to be performed soon. For example, you make all that decision pre-given on that, that I need to sign that now, so I'm going to send the API and pay the extra cost of doing that. And our benchmarks don't show that. However, there will be many cases where you don't need to do that because you either don't need the result immediately, and the split phase API allows us to separate those things, or because you can wait for a time slice. And so there's a trade-off between time slicing latency and the message servicing delay for a particular domain. So our experience is that, yes, this happens, and if you run multiple things on a call, you have a trade-off between how much time slice and how long it takes to service a message. And I can show you graphs that show essentially what you expect, right? As you adjust the time slice situation, as you send it in the process for control, it affects the message latency. But I think it's important to decouple these things.
Can you speak up, please?
I can hear you, so I can try to repeat it.
Messages to get lost or
corrupted? That's a really interesting question. So, at least on current current operating hub, and
in the foreseeable future, maybe.
I think if messages do get lost inside the machine, this model of structuring the OS is a better way to handle that.